We're about to wrap up this three-part series on the six changing demands of today's workforce. We have covered how they want to go from having a paycheck to a purpose, from my satisfaction to my development, from having a boss to having a coach, from annual reviews to ongoing conversations. And in today's episode, we're going to wrap up the series with focusing on strengths versus weaknesses and how today's workforce wants a life over just a job. Let's dive in to this final episode of the series. Welcome to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast, where we are changing the wave of the future. Like it or not, the world has changed. And as an exceptional leader, you have to change with it or risk being left behind. Hi, I'm your host, Sherry Miter. I'm here to help you navigate this new leadership style. Inside the podcast, you'll discover what your team really wants and needs from you, how to tap into your God-given talents, how to increase your productivity with a strengths-based team, and how to realign with your North Star to truly enjoy your work and your life. This podcast will inspire and empower you today so you can elevate your influence into the future. If you're ready to step out of your comfort zone, then untie those dock lines and jump on board as we begin navigating your leadership. All right, so as I shared, we've been talking about these six changing demands of today's workforce. And yes, they have been spearheaded by today's millennials and Gen Zs, but as I've mentioned before, I feel like these changes have been a long time coming. And that the millennials were just vocal enough to bring them to a conversation, to bring them to attention, and to help others see that, yeah, you know, what we've been doing hasn't been working. And especially with number five, this is one of my favorites, of course, being a Gallup certified strengths coach. And that is that today's workforce wants their leaders, and they want to be able to themselves focus on their strengths versus their weaknesses. And research shows that weaknesses will never develop into strengths. Gone are the days of those old thoughts of you're just not trying hard enough, or keep working at it and you'll get better. Or even this one that I heard from my mentor and leader in network marketing many times. If you can conceive it, you can achieve it. Well, here's the truth. Maybe you can't. Just because you think of something doesn't mean you'll ever be good at it. Because we have to stay within our own strengths. And yes, if you keep working at something, you're naturally going to improve, but you may never excel at it. And it may always be frustrating to you, and it may always feel hard to you. And if it's not naturally in your wheelhouse. So those thoughts are all backwards. And here's a little scenario I want you to think about if you are a parent. If you had a child who brought home a report card, maybe they're in high school, and they brought home a report card, or maybe you experienced this as a child yourself. And let's say on that report card, they had two A's, one B, and one F in math. They were excelling in science and math, but they had an F in English. As a parent, which one of those grades do you talk about first? What do you focus in on? Sadly enough, most of us as parents would focus in on the F. We would talk to them, what happened here? Why didn't you do better in English? You know, what went wrong? Instead of encouraging them on the A's and the B's. And here's the truth, that even if that child worked really hard next semester in English, where they had the F, they might get a D at the end of that semester, maybe even a C if they worked super duper hard, but they would never excel in English. Chances are they would never go into a writing career. They would never become a journalist. They would never do anything that would make them work using English to excel. But if you encourage them to dive deeper into that science or math where they were already getting A's and those subjects that were coming naturally easy for them, who knows what they could excel in later in life? The possibilities would be endless. And it's the same idea for you personally and for the teams that you lead. If we can quit fixating on what's not going right and what we don't excel in, and just focus in on what we already naturally do well, we can become exceptional in those subject matters. So the first step is really to identify what are your natural talents and strengths. And that's why I love the Clifton Strengths 34 assessment, because many of us don't recognize what our natural unique talents are. We don't understand that these things that are so easy for us are harder for other people. We don't understand that they are our unique talents and strengths. And that's why I am such an advocate for the Clifton Strengths 34 assessment, because in black and white, people start to recognize like, oh, I didn't know that was a unique talent of mine. I didn't know that was a strength of mine. I just always wondered why that didn't come easy for somebody else. So when you take an assessment like Clifton Strengths, it will identify your natural talents so that you can lean into them, focus in on them. And it also shows you the areas that you're not naturally strong in with your full 34 report. Now, I'm not going to go over the whole assessment here. You've heard me talk about that before. If not, you can go back to some of my previous episodes where we talk in depth about the Clifton Strengths 34 report, or message me and I can give you more details. But basically, it's going to show you what your top five, your top 10 natural talents and strengths are. And also at the bottom, the top, you know, the bottom five or 10 where your lesser talents are. And sometimes I have my coaching clients ask us like, well, if I work really hard at this, the ones that are down on the bottom, can I move them to my top 10? And has it ever happened before? I think once or twice I've heard of all the millions of people that have taken the assessment, that can happen. But for most people, that will never happen. And that's not what we want you to focus on. We want you to stay focused on your strengths. Now, yes, you do need to learn to manage your areas of lesser talent, and I'll talk about those in a minute, how to do that. But when we can really focus in on what we do well, that's where we're going to get maximum results. When people are able to use their natural, God-given strengths, they will have more energy, they're more satisfied, they're usually a lot happier, less stress, and ultimately perform much better. Now, I don't know about you, but I want a team full of more energetic, happier, more satisfied, less stressed, and performing better team members, right? Isn't that what you want for your team and for yourself? And I want to give another example here that I love doing this exercise when I do my Discover Your Strengths workshops. And it's a writing exercise. And no, it has nothing to do with English and writing essays, but it's a simple little exercise we do that shows the power of staying within your strengths. And what it is I have the participants all pull out a piece of paper, and I let them know that they're going to write three times on their paper the words, I use my strengths every day. And they pull that out and they think this is going to be easy peasy. But then I let them know right before they get started, because I tell them it is going to be timed, that here's the catch, that they have to use their non-dominant hand. And let me tell you, when I say go, there is so much grumbling and anxiety in the room, like the air of the room just takes on this place of stress for people. Just from this simple exercise of writing, I use my strengths every day, three times with their non-dominant hand. It takes them twice as long as it would with their dominant hand. And most of the time, it's barely legible what they've written. But most importantly, what I really sense is just how much anxiety and stress and grumbling and almost anger people take on with this activity because it's hard for them. It doesn't come natural. And that's what's happening out there in the workforce today for so many people. And it's been happening for years. It's like working with your non-dominant hand, trying to write with it. People are going to work and they're doing jobs that they're not naturally fit for. They're not using their strengths. And a lot of times they're having to do things that are would actually fall in their weaker areas or lesser talented areas. And that's why there's so much anxiety on Sunday nights and that actual physically feeling sick because they know they have to go to work on Monday to a job that's not meant for them. And that's what we want to change. We want to find and create a workforce where people can show up and know that they're using their natural talents almost every day. So back to this writing exercise. After I have the participants write the I use my strengths every day three times with their non-dominant hand, they then get an opportunity to do the same exercise using their dominant hand. And that totally changes the air in the room. It's more joyous. It's easy peasy. People are like, oh, I can do this. No big deal. There almost becomes a race to see who can complete it first. And many take pride in their penmanship when they complete it with their dominant hand. So imagine if you could create a work environment like this, where people are working within their strengths. They feel like what they do matters. They feel like they can do it easily and with pride. And where almost everyone's working within their strengths, at least 80% of the day. I always tell my clients, hey, if you can live and work 80% of your time in your top 10 or in your top 10, 80% of your day, you're going to have a great life. Like it's impossible. There's always going to be times we have to do things we're not naturally fit for. But if it's only 20% versus the 80% we can live and work in our strengths, that's when the magic happens. And when you're working within your strengths and you have that work environment, people are going to get into the flow. They're excited. They're proud of the work that they do. And they feel a lot more fulfilled. They're also going to be more encouraging of others to do the same. Now, I know our default is to focus on weaknesses. It's just human nature. It's just how we've operated for so long. And I'm not sure why, or, you know, it goes back to that whole with the grade. Maybe it's just because we've been raised that way. And I find that even with myself, I critique my work all the time, even my own cooking. And I'm a pretty decent cook, I would say. My mother's from the Midwest. My father's from Louisiana. So I inherited the best of the Midwestern and Cajun cooking. So I feel like I can cook pretty well most of the time. But I'm always critiquing my own cooking. I'm always thinking, oh, they could have used more salt or less salt or whatever it is. It's just our human nature. And honestly, we don't want to not pay attention to our areas of weakness or lesser talent. We do need to acknowledge them because we can always get better. But we don't want to spend most of our time focusing on them like so many of our old bosses, old employers wanted to do. Now, what do we want to do with our weaknesses? Again, first step is just to acknowledge them. We all have areas of lesser talent. We aren't meant to be well-rounded, but we're meant to surround ourselves with teams so that we can have well-rounded teams. So, once you identify areas of lesser talent, you can decide, can I delegate this to somebody else that's better at this than I am? Can I partner with somebody that maybe I have a strength they don't have and we can partner together to help each other out in those areas of lesser talent? Or sometimes you can use one of your other strengths to compensate. You'll end up with the same results that area of lesser talent would have gotten you. You just go about it in your own unique path to get there. Or sometimes we just have to suck it up and do it. Just know that when you have to do an activity that is in a lesser talented area, that it's probably going to drain you and exhaust you. It will be one of those days that you come home and all you want to do is flop on the couch, maybe pour that glass of wine and watch Netflix the rest of the night. And that's okay every once in a while to do that. You just don't want to live and work in a place that that's what it looks like every single day. I know there's times when I have to do things, whether that they are high-tech projects where I know I'm going to have to spend a lot of time using technology, and that stresses me out. That is not an area of greater talent. Or I'm more relationship building. So I love those small, intimate, deep conversations in small groups. I'm not big on large networking groups. So I know if I'm going to have to be out networking and doing a lot of small talk, that exhausts me. So I plan accordingly. I allow myself to have a treat later in that afternoon. Maybe it's time to take a long nap. Maybe it's time to read a book, time to just plug in and regroup. Maybe it's time to have a really great cup of coffee at my favorite coffee shop. Just know that when you have to work in those areas of lesser talent, that you should treat yourself well afterwards. And if you do have to address an area of weakness in a team member, remember the good old-fashioned sandwich, or my husband calls it the Oreo cookie routine, where if you do have to critique someone, layer it with a compliment, then the area you have to address, and then finish with another compliment about their strengths. And that's the sandwich approach. So how do we go about creating a strength-based workplace? In their book, It's the Manager, Moving from Boss to Coach, Jim Clifton and Jim Harder outline the 5 steps to building a strength-based culture. Now, I'm going to paraphrase and add my own 2 cents into these 5 steps, but know that most of this came from their book. Number one, it starts with you, the leader. The leader must be sold out on this. Do you know as a leader what your strengths are? And are you working within your strengths? Are you being an example in the workplace? Now, this may take time for that. And it takes time of you showing up, working in your strengths to build the trust so that your team will be excited about it as well. And in my high performance team workshops that we and programs that we run, I spend time working with the leader a lot before we even approach the team. It is so vital that the leader be sold out on strengths before anything else happens. Otherwise, the rest of this won't work. So number one, it starts with you, the leader. Number two, to build a strengths-based organization and strengths-based culture, it requires that every employee discover their strengths. Now, I mentioned earlier the Clifton Strengths Assessment. I recommend everybody on your team take the full 34 assessment. Besides just knowing your strengths, this starts to give a common language that your team will have based on strengths. It creates collaboration, respect, and a deeper level of communication amongst your team members and from you as the leader to your team. In the high-performing team programs, we spend most of our time on this, on how to create that common language, how to collaborate, how to communicate with each other. It becomes magical for the teams. Number three, build an internal network of strengths coaches. Now, this may or may not work for your organization. a lot of large corporations are sending their HR and other managers to Gallup to become certified strengths coaches. Or the E to Grow courses, there are inside corporate people taking their courses. But smaller companies, this may not be feasible because of time or money. But you can take advantage of outside coaches and consultants, like myself, to work as part of your team. We can be that outside person who comes in and gets integrated as part of your team to build that strengths-based culture. Also, you can encourage team members to look for and encourage each other with strengths, again, just by having that common language. Number four, to build a strengths-based culture, integrate strengths into performance management, working with managers to really understand how to continue to create a strengths-based environment after the initial workshops are over. This is so vital, and you maybe have experienced this before, where you have an outside person come in and they do this great workshop on a topic, and everybody is excited about it. But then a week after the workshop is over, everything goes back to status quo. You go back to what it was like beforehand, and everybody forgets what happened. And you don't want that to happen with creating a strengths-based culture. And again, that's why I'm so passionate about not just coming in and doing strengths workshops for organizations, but doing a program like High Performing Teams, where we help train your managers on how to keep the conversation flowing, how to help your team members remember what their strengths are and use them every day by creating habits to integrate into their workday. So it really does, again, become part of how your managers talk to your team members and how everybody just creates their own strengths culture. And the last step shared on how to create a strengths-based culture is to transform your learning programs. So from recruiting to onboarding and continuing development, make sure that they align with this new approach and that you allow new hires and existing team members to work within their strengths so you can create those well-rounded teams. So again, it's about creating the entire culture of strengths. And does it take time? Absolutely. This is not something that's going to happen after a 2.5 to 3 hour workshop or even a full day workshop. This happens by creating a program that will take months, if not a full year, to start integrating. And does it require work? Absolutely, it does. But is it worth it? You tell me. So a very comprehensive Gallup study showed that strengths-based development leads to 10 to 19% increased sales, 14 to 29% increased profit, 3 to 7% higher customer engagement, and 9 to 15% increase in engaged employees. And remember, engaged employees are happier at work and they're not the ones online looking for a new job. So again, if you need support in this, reach out and let's set up a call to see how we can work together to create a strengths-based culture for your organization. Okay, let's wrap up this series with our final demand or request of today's workforce. And that is they want to move from my job to my life. Here's the thing. The days of the hustle and the grind are over. Millennials watched their parents work crazy hours to amass a lot of money, but then they never took time to enjoy real vacations. They watched as their parents built these McMansions, but they were never home to enjoy their beautiful houses. If you Google workforce moving from my job to my life, you'll get about 173 million results. One of those articles is from Forbes. And they report that Prudential, the large global financial services giant, conducted a survey of workers, and the results are astounding. Some 48% of Americans are rethinking the type of job they want post-pandemic. According to research, 53% say they'd switch to an entirely new industry if they could retrain. Prudential's latest Pulse of the American Worker survey found that 25% of workers plan to look for a new job post-pandemic, and compensation, work-life balance, and lack of growth opportunities are top priorities. This is a little different than what the American journalist Derek Thompson calls workism. He defines workism as the belief that work is not only necessary to economic production, but also the centerpiece of one's identity and life's purpose, wrote Thompson, and the belief that any policy to promote human welfare must always encourage more work. Here's the thing. Yes, we all want a job that we feel like is our life's purpose. I mean, that was the number one demand of today's workforce, is to move from my paycheck to my purpose. Today's workforce is really willing to have smaller paychecks for more flexibility, smaller homes in order to create more memories and more vacations. Some are even willing to sacrifice less purpose if it gives them more time with family to keep their priorities straight. People today want well-rounded lives. They not only spend time with family, they want to also pursue hobbies. This is a great thing for you as a leader. You want your team members to pursue and have time to pursue outside hobbies. This is the benefit for the workplace because it helps them perform better at work. Marguerite Ward from CNBC had an article on the three science-backed reasons having a hobby will help your career, and I'll put the link in the show notes. But she said, number one, it'll have better work performance. Having a creative hobby is associated with the positive work-related traits like creativity on projects and a better attitude on the job. Number two, improved physical health. Lower blood pressure, total cortisol, waist circumference, and body mass index were all a sign of having a hobby. In other words, even low movement hobbies like knitting, crafting, and guitar are connected to better health. And don't we want healthier team members? That means less sick days, right? And number three, having a hobby reduces stress. Immediate and even days later. It creates improved focus, happiness, and a longer life. So you want to give your team members the time and space and encouragement to have hobbies outside of work. What else does this mean for you as a leader with going back to wanting my life over my job? How else can you provide this as a leader or manager to your team members? One thing is to know what your team members need outside of work. What are their family dynamics at home? Do they have aging parents? Do they have school-age kids who may not have a bus ride home today? You need to know that. Do they have small children who are at home while they're trying to work from home? Do they have a spouse who's working nearby, maybe in the same room they are every day? Or maybe a spouse who's traveling out of town or deployed or in an emergency worker? You need to know these things because they will affect how they work and how they show up mentally to do their work. The other thing you need to know is, when are they at their best? If possible, can you provide a flexible work schedule where as long as the task and the jobs are checked off and done well, it doesn't matter when they do them? gone are the days of the 9-to-5 mentality. If your team members work best in the morning when it's quiet, is it okay if they get up and get their work started at 5 o'clock in the morning so they can be done by noontime? Or maybe do they need to take a break in the middle of the day, but they can get back to work later in the evening when the kids have gone to bed? How is hybrid working for them? This is a conversation that we need to ask. Is it good for them? Are they enjoying it? What are their struggles? Are they missing that socialization time with their work peers? How can you create space for them to get together? Because sometimes the best brainstorming was done around the water cooler. Can you provide that for your team if they're hybrid working or working from home? Is technology keeping them stuck, especially if they are over, you know, the age of 40 or 50? And even a lot of millennials are not great at technology. And sometimes they're embarrassed to admit that. So how are they doing with the technology that they need to do their jobs if they're working from home? And on the other side of all this is, do you know what your team members' ambitions are? Do you know what makes them tick? Do you know where they want to be in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road? And how can you support them in reaching those goals? Here's the thing. The bottom line is, as a great leader, which I know you want to be, you need to know your team members' life outside of work. Doesn't mean you have to be best buddies with them and best of friends or hang out even, but you should know what their life looks like outside of the workplace. And how can you help them be their best at both? Because today, and especially with the work environment the way it is, the two mingle they're so intermixed together, and it's very hard sometimes to keep them separate. So as an employer, as a leader, as a manager, if you can learn to care how the life looks outside of work, you're going to get the best of that team member when they show up for work. And here's the thing, it doesn't have to be complicated. And I'm going to do a whole talk on this. You know, there's a lot of talk right now on being an empathetic leader. And for many of you, because empathy is one of your top strengths, that comes natural and that's easy for you. And for some of us, that's really hard. Empathy is really low for me. I'm embarrassed to say sometimes, but it's true. It's not one of my top strengths. And it's pretty way down there. I'll let you know when I do this series or do that episode what number it is. But we don't have to necessarily be empathetic leaders, but we do have to care. And caring is different than being empathetic. And we don't have to overcomplicate it. Sometimes it's as simple as asking your team members this question: how are you? How are you doing today? And then pause long enough to really listen to the answer. Sometimes we ask the question, but we ask it in such a hurried way that we don't pause to let them really respond. And that having a true, heartfelt answer back is going to take time and trust. They may not answer it right away, but when they learn that you really do care and the answer really matters to you, you will get the answer. And that will change the way your employees are engaged at work because they trust you and they know that you really do care. Okay, I know this has been a lot. It's been a lot for me to research. It has been a lot for me to give to you guys, but it's so vital, so important in this age of people being dissatisfied at work and they're looking for new jobs and they don't know what they want to do next. They don't know where they're going. If you can start to make some of these changes that we've been talking about in the series, you are going to not just keep the best team members, but you will start attracting the best team members. And just a quick review here, The six changing demands or desires of the workforce today are: one, they want to move from having just a paycheck to a purpose, from moving from my satisfaction to my development, from having just a boss to having a coach, from annual reviews to ongoing conversations, from my weaknesses to my strengths, from my job to my life. As we wrap up this series, you may be left feeling like, hey, I'm doing pretty good. You can give yourself a pat on the back. Maybe you've checked off at least four or five, maybe all six of these that you've already implemented, or you know you're working on them. And it's showing you have engaged and happy team members at work. And if that's you, I say kudos to you. Keep it up. Don't change anything. Keep focused on it. Keep the blinders on. You're doing great. And if you've implemented some of these things and you've seen the changes, I would love to chat with you to have you on as a guest on a future podcast. My goal for 2022 is to feature leaders who are doing it well, who are doing it right, and to share some of the changes you've made so that you can inspire others to take action as this whole world is trying to figure out this new way of work. And on the other hand, if you've been listening to this and you're feeling like, yikes, we have a lot of work to do at our place, at our workplace, our team, this is where I can support you. Let's connect and create a plan to make 2022 the year of change for you. I'm here to support you, whether it's leadership coaching, because again, it starts with the leader. Maybe we just need to dive into your strengths as a leader first. Or maybe your team's ready for that high-performing teams program I've been talking about. So let's hop on a call, no obligation, and see if we're a fit to work together and what would be the best place to start. And who knows, we might just develop a plan and in 3 to 6 months, I'll be asking you to be a guest on the podcast to share all the great changes and success stories you've had for your leadership and your organization. And if you've enjoyed this series, please share it with a friend. Who do you know that's a manager or HR in a company, has just started a startup business and is now finds themselves leading a team of 5 or 6? Or maybe they're on a sales team and they're thinking, we need to change some things in our organization. If you could just forward this series or forward this podcast to them and say, hey, I think you would enjoy this and find it valuable, I would so appreciate it. As always, thank you for your time for listening to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast. I'm excited about 2022, and I hope you are as well and all the things we have in store for you. I'll be sharing in the new year some of those plans. My hope and prayer is that today's episode left you feeling inspired and empowered with some tangible steps to implement today. But honestly, the podcast is just the beginning. Through my coaching, my clients learn how to lean into their strengths to create their unique style of leadership, along with gaining strategies to create dynamic and productive teams, teams with a mutual passion and respect for each other. Whether you just need a few small course corrections or you feel like you need an entirely new ship to lead, I do love a challenge. I'd love to invite you to send me a DM, or better yet, let's hop on a call and see how we can continue this leadership journey together. The link to book a call is in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.